All right, so this is the generic, I'm sorry, the generic trigger warning for certain of my appellate corpus juris podcasts where I talk about procedure. And chances are, if I put this trigger warning in the episode, it's because I'm talking about a particular state that is peculiar, right? So let me backtrack, right? So from Houston, Texas, born and raised, it's pronounced H-E-B, not Heb. Whataburger is great. Bleed Orange, Go Horns, Giga Maggies. I know that's I just perjured myself because I said Giga Maggies and Go Horns, but you get the general idea, right? Card-carrying Democrat, and I think the last time that it snowed here in Texas when I was here was when I was 10, and it snowed once, right? And it was like a combination between like snow and sleet, right? Went to college out in California. I think the last time it snowed on the campus there was 1962, right? So 22 years of continuous sun, so to speak, right? So it's 70 degrees in the wintertime, sunny in 75, as they say. And if you're like me and you like warm weather, and you're a card-carrying Democrat, then your hotspots, you're basically looking at a California, a New Mexico, or Hawaii, right? That's where you're at home. And then we have a bunch of other states, right, that are in between on the spectrum, right? So a bunch of states, great up north, folks wouldn't vote for a Republican to save their lives. But it's cold. It's cold. And you're in a bad spot when it's 1 degree outside and you turn on. I'm sorry. You're in a bad spot when you turn on the Jets game and it's Jets 3, Giants 10, but it's 1 degree outside, right? And then you go down south, right? Great weather, great folks, great parties. The beaches are great. The sand is great, and what have you. But there are a bunch of Republicans from the top down. It's the solid South for a reason, right? And in Texas, it's probably not going to change, right? They say it might change by 2040, but most folks get the gist right there. And there's been a general collective decision. That at least as far as the energy economy is concerned, that any environmental concerns will just be thrown to the wayside. We're going to sacrifice the welfare of the beaches to have a robust energy sector. Florida, not so much, right? Which is the other big, great state down south. And I'm really frustrated when I think about Florida because the economy is essentially premised on tourism and agriculture, and there's not much to be said. For policies that that entail high tariffs and almost purposeful environmental degradation, right? So why is Florida red, right? If the economy is premised on the existence of low tariffs so you can get your crop out to international markets and you need the beaches to be in good shape, and the result of all that is that you need good environmental protections. When, well, why not just go blue? But that's me digressing. Why should you be interested in this peculiar state that I've set out for you today? Whether it's Montana or Alaska or Arkansas or some other peculiar state. Well, a couple of reasons, right? So it used to be that back in the day you settled down in a state. Maybe it was 1960 or 1980 or pre-2000, whatever. And you took the bar exam and you were admitted to that state, and maybe you were admitted in the state that was contiguous with it, or if you lived in the tri-state area, you were admitted in New York, New Jersey, or Connecticut, right? But fortunately, the MBE has changed all that, right? So now you can take the bar exam and you can be admitted to 10, 20, 30, 40, 40 states, upwards of 40 states, right? Why is that significant as it pertains to this? Well, some people would say that just by virtue of taking the MBE and being admitted to the state that I'm talking about in this seceding podcast, that you would be conspicuous, right? So on a rank of 1 to 10, most folks are admitted to one state. 2 or 3 is on the high side, but 10, 20, 30, 40, that is not normal, right? That's like a 10,000 on a rank of 1 to 10. And you'd be conspicuous. And perhaps for that reason alone, folks would be interested in the procedure as it relates to the state that I'm talking about now. Another reason to be interested in the podcast. Well, let's say that you work for a firm, right? And I highly doubt that most firms are going to turn around someone admitted to 10, 20, 30, much less 40 states, right? Or whether they could legally do it, regardless of whether or not you were a Caucasian male or African American female or anyone in between, right? It helps your firm out because now firms, they get called to do peculiar things, right? So these Tony Law firms in New York and DC, right? They have a bunch of staff. And sometimes they get called to do peculiar things in Alaska or Montana, right? And they have to get outside counsel to go to these states, right? And if you're admitted to that state, well, that's just one less person that they have to pay, right? So good for the firm. And more than that, you can bring in any business that can be had from these states, so you can become a rainmaker of sorts, so to speak. So that's one reason. Another reason is that it allows you to remain, at least this bar membership scheme that I'm setting out allows you to remain active in the appellate scene, even if you didn't clerk, right? So let's say that maybe you screwed up in your first year, or you took that third or fourth degree, took that BCL, took that medical degree, whatever it is, and the folks who you studied under said, well, we'll send you for these degrees, but anything else that comes after that, we can't guarantee it, or we just won't send you, which is their right. They don't have to do it. This allows you to remain active on the appellate scene. So how do you do that? You just pick two states per week, right? So maybe 1 week you're in Washington and Oregon, the next week you're in Louisiana and Texas, the next week you're in New York and Vermont. Pick your states, it doesn't matter. And you do two double-spaced, five-page appellate filings per week, right? You do that in a year, you get 104 briefs. You do that in 10 years, you get about 1,000. You do it over the course of 40 to 50 years, you get about 4,000 to 5,000, right? And remember that at most of these appellate boutiques, 300 filings is on the high side, right, for these partners, right? So you'd be a 26, 27, 28, 29, perhaps a 30-year-old with 100 filings, right? And that by itself, again, is very anomalous, right? So I was talking about bar admission numbers, right? Having 100 appellate filings as a 20-something-year-old, that itself is anomalous, right? That's a 1,000, that's a 10,000 on a scale of 1 to 10, right? And don't tell me that somebody with that many filings wouldn't be up for something, some sort of appellate gig or an SG position maybe in a small state eventually, right? It might work in a small state. It's probably not going to work in a big state. Texas, California, Florida, New York, etc., right? I mean, just you might need a clerk to be noticed there. But in a small state, it could probably work, right? It might. And yet another reason to be interested in this little scheme I'm laying out here. Well, why would you care about admission to Kansas, right? Well, admission to this state in a federal circuit court, right, automatically is going to give you admission to the appellate courts, right? So you're admitted in Kansas, and now you can get access to admission to the 10th Circuit, and now you can do these amicus filings that I'm talking about, not only in Kansas state courts, but you can go to these appellate courts, right? And if you can, it'll intervene if they'll take you. So it's a great deal. And, you know, I needed like an 8-minute trigger warning to set this out, but chances are that if I've attached this warning to the podcast, it's because the state I'm talking about is either chock full of proud Trump supporters, or it's because it's cold, or in a worst case scenario, it's cold and people are out in the cold because they want to attend a Trump rally, right? And that's just like the worst of both worlds. So that's why I need this trigger warning. Now for the actual episode. This episode of Corpus Juris will continue with our focus on Idaho appellate procedure. And here, I'm going to be talking about stays, but not your run-of-the-mill stays that most folks are accustomed to on appeal, but rather ex parte stays. So changing it up a bit, and then the rugged Latin to boot. What of this? Right. So Idaho Rule of Appellate Procedure 13.1 permits litigants to request an ex parte a temporary stay with the Idaho Supreme Court while a stay application is pending before that tribunal. The ex parte application must disclose the efforts that have been made to provide notice to opposing counsel or the reasons why notice ought not to be provided. A majority of the justices sitting on the Idaho Supreme Court can grant a stay if they find that immediate and irreparable injury, loss, or damage will result to the applicant before a ruling can be had upon the application for a stay during the appeal. If granted, the court can condition the stay on the provision of collateral and set the temporary stay's duration. Opposing counsel can then file a motion to dissolve the stay with the court. This filing must be served on the other parties to the action, right?
And that concludes this episode on Idaho appellate procedure and ex parte stays under the state rules.